106.6.
That was Billy Ocean with Caribbean Queen. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on 106.6, live from North Manchester. This is a new weekly show, well, it's been going a few weeks now, where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, and look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please take a look. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, please get in touch via the Facebook page. Just search for the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And also on there you can see a lot of the trailers and sort of gameplay footage for a lot of what I'll be talking about on the show today. Also, if you want to add me on Facebook at the moment, if you look for Dom Says Robinson, at the moment I've got a picture up of a pint of Pilsner for my recent holiday to Prague. And a very tasty pint it was too. And the cheapest I found as well, about £1.20, £1.25, something like that. Coming up in the show today, we've got a review of Unknown, starring Liam Neeson. We have the top 10 movie charts. We've got new cinema releases, including Captain America, Horrid Henry, Zookeeper, plus, in my view, some films that actually sound like they're worth watching. Got some new DVD releases, including Rango, The Eagle, and the Oscar-winning genius, multi-Oscar-winning genius, that is Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. Well, it had to come out sometime. And we've also got, and this is all in the first hour, we've also got some film news for you. We're going to start off with the review on Unknown, which I saw on Blu-ray recently, but it's out on DVD as well. In Unknown, Liam Neeson plays Dr. Martin Harris, a man who's taken a trip to Berlin for a biotechnology summit so he can give a presentation with his wife Elizabeth, played by January Jones from Mad Men. She's accompanying him on his travels. Alas, as soon as he gets to the hotel, he finds that one of his bags has been left behind at the airport. While the missus goes to check in, he takes a taxi back to the airport, trying to phone Elizabeth from his mobile, but he just can't seem to get a signal. Must be on Vodafone. As luck would have it, a traffic accident causes the taxi to go off a bridge, causing Martin to crack his head against the window and make him pass out. Gina, Diane Kruger, a taxi driver, rescues him and drags him to the surface, but then soon flees the scene. Once in hospital, the doctor asks him his name. He replies and is told that his heart stopped for several minutes and he was in a coma for 4 days. The doctor states that no identification could be found about his person. Confused that no one's tried to contact him whilst in hospital, least of all his wife, Martin releases himself from his doctor's care and goes to the hotel, tries to get access to his room, but spots his wife and goes after her. On seeing her, she immediately states she doesn't know him. Martin tries to explain, but she's saying he must have her confused with someone else, and calls over another Martin Harris, played by Aidan Quinn. Even when the security guard does a search online, they can only find the fake Martin Harris. So what on earth is going on? He also finds a cab in which the accident happened, but finds that the driver, Gina, is a Bosnian illegal immigrant without insurance who is now working in a cafe. Basically, Martin's life is in danger as he searches for answers and wants to make all the pieces fit together. When it comes to the cast, Liam Neeson is as wooden as ever. I'm not quite sure why he gets picked for endless action roles. Maybe he's the go-to guy when Nicolas Cage is out of town. Similarly, Mad Men's January Jones is equally bland as his wife. Diane Kruger, however, makes for decent support as a taxi driver who enters his life, and following a tip-off from a nurse at the hospital, downfalls Bruno Ganz, plays former member of the East German secret police Ernst Jürgen, whose role will become clear when you watch it. But I don't want to give away anything as that would, I wouldn't want to have that spoiled for myself. Overall, Unknown is totally implausible and can be predictable at times, but it does the disorientation aspect of the lead character very well and is nicely filmed. It's also much better than Taken, a recent thriller of Neeson's, but then for that film, that's not for saying very much. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the picture looks crisp and clear throughout, with some striking colours at certain times, and all lending itself very well to the aforementioned disorientation of Neeson's character. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 master audio, and gets a bit of a workout when it needs to, but I wouldn't say it's 100% demo disc. That said, there are no problems with it at all. The extras, there's Unknown the Story, which only lasts 4 minutes, which is a brief segment, too short to be of any real value, as various cast and crew talk about the film mixed in with clips. There's Behind the Scenes, which again is just a little bit longer. It's just basically more of the same, and at that point I thought this is turning into a rather disappointing set of extras. There's Liam Neeson, known action hero. And, this is only about 4.5 minutes as well. This is a piece about how Liam Neeson makes lots of action films, although, as I say, I can't imagine why, as he's such a wooden actor. Then there's some interviews, which are separate ones, a few minutes apiece, for Liam Neeson, Diane Kruger, January Jones, the director, Jean Colette Serra, and producers Joel Silver and Leonard Goldberg. There's also a trailer lasting just over a minute, which I think gives too much away, but I try to avoid watching trailers before I watch the actual film, because in general they do give too much away. But anyway, overall, the film, I think, it's a fairly solid 7 out of 10. Picture, I give it a 10 out of 10 for this one. Sound, it wasn't 100% demo disc. I give that a 7 as well. It does what it needs to. The extras are mere 3. Overall, it's a decent 7 out of 10. So, I mean, if it's not a film you've seen before and you're sort of thinking about it, then I'd give it a rental to watch it at least. If you're a massive fan of Neeson's and you've got out of everything he does, then maybe buy it. But yeah, other than that, I'd just give it a rental. It's worth a watch. Okay, so that's your review of Unknown. We're going to be having some the movie charts very shortly. But first of all, we're going to have the Chi-Lites with Have You Seen Her? This is 106.6.
106.6.
Listening to Manchester's 106.6. This is the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And that was the Chi-Lites with Have You Seen Her? Yes, she's probably run off with a milkman. Anyway, this section, we're going to be having a look at the movie charts. And I mentioned this before, but just for anyone who's not heard it before, I was going to have the UK charts in this show, but then ended up giving up because they just seemed to disappear off online. You used to be able to get them every single week, and then they just disappeared. Internet Movie Database ended up with them up to the end of May, and that was about it. That's as far as they got. We're now in late July. But anyway, the top 10 in America at the moment, we've got the Captain America, the First Avenger, which has taken $65.8 million in its first week. I'm not going to mention, don't going to talk about much about that right now. I'm going to mention it in the new releases section, because that's out this Friday in the UK. Number two, we've got Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, which is, in the space of 2 weeks, it's taken $274 million. Which is rather a lot. The final chapter begins as Harry, Ron and Hermione continue their quest of finding and destroying the Dark Lord's 3 remaining Horcruxes, the magical items responsible for his immortality. But as the mystical Deathly Hallows are uncovered and Voldemort finds out about their mission, the biggest battle begins and life as they know it will never be the same again. Now personally, I've yet to see a Harry Potter film. I don't read the books, for any books really for that matter. And when it comes to this series, the only one I have any interest in watching is The Prisoner of Azkaban, as it was directed by Alfonso Cuarón, a man who brought incredible visual flair to Children of Men, starring Clive Owen, where there were scenes that lasted like 20, 25 minutes in a single take. And that one keeps coming up on, it's been on ITV, premiered on there, it's now coming up on ITV4 now and again, so look out for that, it's really worth watching. Number three, we've got Friends with Benefits, which has only taken the mere $18.5 million in its opening week. Dylan, Justin Timberlake, and Jamie, Milo Kunis, think it's going to be easy to add the simple act of sex to their friendship, despite what Hollywood romantic comedies would have them believe. They soon discover, however, that getting physical really does always lead to complications. This one also stars Woody Harrelson, Patricia Clarkson, Richard Jenkins, the dad from 6 Feet Under, who died at the start of the first episode. Emma Stone from Easy A and Zombieland, and Jenna Elfman. I've not seen that one, but the whole premise of that film doesn't grab me, to be honest. Just seems a bit bland, typical romantic comedy. You know how it's all going to pan out. Number four, got Transformers, Dark of the Moon. That's taken $326 million to date. Number five, we've got Horrible Bosses, which has come out over here just last week, I think. In that one, Nick hates his boss, mostly because he's expected to work from before sunrise to after sunset. And his boss, Mr. Harkin, calls him out for being a minute late and blackmails him so he can't quit. Dale hates his boss, Dr. Julia Harris, because she makes unwelcome sexual advances when he's about to get married. I don't know what his problem is. It's Jennifer Aniston playing him. What's his issue? But Dale is on that pesky list of child offenders, so he can't quit. Kurt actually likes his job and his boss, well, up until his boss dies and the boss's coked-out psychopathic son takes over. But who would be crazy enough to quit their jobs in such poor economic times? Instead, Nick, Dale and Kurt drunkenly and hypothetically discuss how to kill their bosses. And before they know it, they've hired a murder consultant to help them pull off the three deeds. The film stars Jason Bateman, Kevin Spacey, Charlie Day, Lindsay Sloan, Jennifer Aniston, Jason Sudeikis, Colin Farrell, and also Donald Sutherland, who basically these days is in everything. Watching the trailer and seeing a few clips of it, this does look like a really good laugh. So this one comes recommended for me. Number six, we've got Zookeeper. More about this in the new releases section too, as that's out this week. Number seven, we've got Cars 2. Number eight, we've got Winnie the Pooh, which is a new animation which came out in the UK in April. Features John Cleese, Jim Cummings, Bud Lucky and Craig Ferguson. Number nine, still hanging in there after several weeks, is Bad Teacher with Cameron Diaz. Number ten, we've got Midnight in Paris. I'm going to have a look at some of the new cinema releases now. We've got, we're going to start off with The Skin I Live In, which is a new Spanish drama thriller directed by Pedro Almodovar, starring Antonio Banderas, Elena Anaya, Marisa Paredes, Jan Cor... I said it's spelt Jan Cornet, but I can't be pronounced Jan Cornet. Jan Cornet, I don't know. And Roberto Alamo. It is loosely based on Thierry Jonquet's novel Tarantula. The film was the first collaboration in 21 years between Almodovar and his former regular cast member, Banderas. It premiered in May this year in competition with the 64th Cannes Film Festival, and this Thursday gets its premiere at the Film 4 Summer Screen at Somerset House. The film tells the story of a surgeon who tries to create a new human skin. Almodovar describes the film as a horror story without screams or frights. The accomplished surgeon, Robert Legard, Banderas, succeeds to cultivate a skin which can withstand any kind of assault. Such a skin would have been able to save his wife, who was burned in a car crash 12 years earlier. To his help, Legard has an accomplice, Marisa Paredes, and a human guinea pig. Now, I watched the trailer for this, but it only lasts 30 seconds, and you can't get an idea of a film from that short a time. However, it's a Pedro Almodovar film, so it could either go hit or miss. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, that was good, but I don't remember being a great fan of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, and I'm trying to think of a film I've seen of his since. I know he's done a few, but I it's just not coming to me whether I've seen any of them since. Also out this week, we got Captain America, the first Avenger. And by the way, the trailers for all these are on the Facebook page. Based on the Marvel Comics character from World War II, a brave yet mild-mannered young soldier named Steve Rogers volunteers to undergo a series of experiments for US Army Super Soldier Program. The military succeeds in transforming him into a human weapon, but quickly decide that their super soldier is far too expensive a creation to risk in combat. So they decide to use him as an army celebrity and parade him across Europe to boost morale by performing in USO shows for American troops. He's even given a costume that bears the colours of Old Glory for the stage. Then, when a Nazi plot reveals itself, Rogers must rise up and become the first Avenger in order to save his country. Steve Rogers becomes Captain America, and he earns his way into the hearts of and souls of every American, bringing hope and justice to a war-weary nation. Later, during a mission to Germany to stop his arch-enemy, the Red Skull, from launching rockets at his allies, Captain America sacrifices himself and winds up frozen in ice for almost six decades. Revived, Steve Rogers must now join forces with new heroes and become an Avenger of the modern age. It's got a big cast in it with Chris Evans as Steve Rogers, aka Captain America, plus Hayley Atwell, Sebastian Stan, Tommy Lee Jones, Hugo Weaving, Dominic Cooper, Richard Armitage, Stanley Tucci, Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury, Toby Jones, and also Michael Brandon. Now, watching the trailer, it does look like a bit of a laugh, but I'm not particularly into superhero movies, and they seem to be coming out at quite a fast rate these days, so it's not going to be top of my list. Now, just before we have some of the more of the new releases out this week, I'm going to have another tune. I'm going to have Frank Music with Confusion Girl. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Frank Music with Confusion Girl. And you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on 106.6, live from North Manchester. Continuing the list of new releases out this week, we've got Zookeeper, which is a comedy starring Kevin James and featuring the voices of Adam Sandler, Sylvester Stallone, Nick Nolte, Don Rickles, Judd Apatow, quite a few people, Jon Favreau, Cher, and Faison Love. It does look like the kind of film that I'd run a mile from, to be honest. Griffin Keyes, Kevin James, sets up a plan to propose to the love of his life, Stephanie, Leslie Bibb. But she rejects him and claims that his career as a zookeeper is what's keeping her away. Heartbroken, Griffin decides the only way to find the woman in his life is to quit his career as a zookeeper and find a more glamorous job. The animals at Franklin Park Zoo love Griffin as their kind-hearted caretaker. Excuse me. After finding out about Griffin's plans to leave the zoo, they react with panic and reveal to Griffin their ability to speak. In order to keep him from leaving, they decide to teach him their personal methods on how he can find the love of his life without having to leave the zoo. Also starring Rosario and Dawson and Donnie Wahlberg, I watched the trailer and, quite frankly, for me, it was as bad as it sounds. But then it is for kids, really. Then we've got Arietti. Now, 14-year-old Arietti and the rest of the Clock family live in peaceful anonymity as they make their own home from items borrowed from the house's human inhabitants. However, life changes for the Clocks when a human boy discovers Arietti. This is a Japanese cartoon from the makers of Spirited Away, and the UK version features voices from the likes of Olivia Colman from 2012 and Peep Show, Mark Strong from Sherlock Holmes and Green Lantern, Geraldine McEwan and Phyllida Law. Both US and UK versions feature Saoirse Ronan from The Lovely Bones in the lead role. I watched the trailer. It just looks like a kid's cartoon, and it's certainly not for me. Maybe if you're into Spirited Away, it might be the kind of thing that's your bag. Then we've got A Better Life. This is a film in which an illegal immigrant gardener in East Los Angeles struggles to keep his son away from gangs while avoiding immigration enforcement agents and searching for a stolen truck. There's no one particularly famous in this film, although I recognise the lead actor, Damien Bichir, a.k.a. Esteban Reyes from Weeds. And from the trailer, it looks like a drama with promise and far more intriguing than 2 hours of crash-bang-wallop from Captain America. Also out this week, we've got Horrid Henry, the movie. And when Henry fails yet again to hand in his homework for the umpteenth time, he has no idea that this will set off a chain of events which will see him forming an unlikely alliance with Moody Margaret, the infuriating girl next door, and his irritating little brother, Perfect Peter. Outwitting corrupt school inspectors and toppling an evil headmaster, winning a talent contest and facing his ultimate nemesis with no way out. All because he's trying to save the very school which he has always professed to hate. The film stars Angelica Houston, Richard E. Grant, Parminder Nagra from ER, Noel Fielding, Matthew Horn, Prunella Scales, and Theo Stevenson as Horrid Henry. Oh, and Dick and Dom as well. I don't have any kids, and at my age, this is not a film I'm going to see. If you've got kids, you'll no doubt take them to it, but you can judge for yourself anyway from the trailer. I say search for the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson on Facebook, and you'll see the trailer from there. Also out this week, the penultimate one we've got for you is Poetry, which is a South Korean drama written and directed by Lee Shang-dong. It tells the story of a suburban woman in her 60s who begins to grow an interest for poetry while struggling with Alzheimer's disease and her irresponsible grandson. Yoon Jong-hee stars in the leading role, which was the first role in a film since 1994. The film was selected for the main competition at the 2010 Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Best Screenplay Award. Other accolades include the Grand Bell Awards for Best Picture and Best Actress. Yang Mi-ha is a 66-year-old grandmother living on government welfare in a small job taking care of an elderly man. She takes care of a grandson, whose divorced mother lives in Busan. He is spiteful and runs the home. Despite the fact that the registration period is over, she enters a poetry class, at the local community centre. At the suggestion of her teacher, she begins writing notes on the things she sees. Her grandson only interacts with his five male friends from school. After a poetry class, Mi-ha meets the fathers of the group of friends, only to discover that the group has, over a period of 6 months, repeatedly raped a girl at their school. The victim left a diary at home before committing suicide. The diary is discovered, and in order to avert a full police investigation, the parents of the boys offer to pay a settlement to the family affected. Despite the troubles in her life and the pain she sees in the lives of others, she cannot help but focus on the positive things she sees instead. Yang visits the mother of the victim and strengthens her resolve to bring the young men, including her grandson, to justice. Now, the trailer itself points out that she has Alzheimer's, but doesn't go into detail about anything else. You can't really judge it from that. Still, I mean, the whole film itself may be worth a watch. Finally, in the new releases, we've got The Light Thief. The main hero of this film is an electrician with a far greater effect on the people around him than his job defines. He is the last link in a huge energetic system, and he becomes the binding bridge between the geopolitical problems of the post-Soviet space and the common people. The economic devastation of the country has had an enormous impact on the industrial workers, and yet despite the upheaval, these people did not cease to love and suffer, to have them be friends, and to enjoy their lives. In particular, our resilient electrician, who possesses a wonderful and open heart, he not only brings electric light, which is often out, to the lives of the inhabitants of this small city, but he also spreads the light of love, loyalty, life, and mainly laughter. Made in Kyrgyzstan, it looks like a combination of drama and light humour, and over the course of 1 hour, 20 minutes, I think it could all work out rather well as a film, to be honest. Okay, that's all your cinema releases for this week. There's quite a few of them there. As I say, all trailers for them are on the Facebook page. In a minute, we're going to be having the new DVDs out this week. But first of all, we've got The Lighthouse Family with Ocean Drive. This is 106.6. 106.6. That was The Lighthouse Family with Ocean Drive. And you're listening to 106.6 live from North Manchester. And I'm Dom Robinson. This is a DVD Fever show with Dom Robinson. Next, we're having a look at the new DVDs out this week, starting with Rango. And from the director of the Pirates of the Caribbean series comes this summer's hottest movie, Rango, featuring Johnny Depp in an original animated comedy adventure that takes moviegoers for a hilarious and heartfelt walk in the Wild West. The story follows the comical, transformative journey of Rango, Johnny Depp, a sheltered comedian living as an ordinary family pet, whilst facing a major identity crisis. After all, how high can you aim when your whole purpose in life is to blend in? When Rango accidentally winds up in the gritty, gunslinging town of Dirt, a lawless outpost populated by the desert's most wily and whimsical creatures, the less than courageous lizard suddenly finds he stands out. Welcomed as the last hope the town has been waiting for, new Sheriff Rango is forced to play his new role to the hilt, until in a blaze of action-packed situations and encounters with outrageous characters, Rango starts to become the hero he only once pretended to be. Now, if this is the kind of film, if you're going to go and see it, you'll see it anyway. But for me, anyone who's been listening to this regularly knows my thoughts on sort of CGI kids' films, and it's not for... Oh, had a slight technical glitch there. But we're back. But the special features, we've got a theatrical and extended version, also director's commentary and deleted scenes. And if you're buying the Blu-ray version, you've also got a couple of featurettes, some making of featurettes. Also out this week, we've got The Eagle, Which is a Roman epic adventure based on the classic novel of the same name, set in the dangerous world of 2nd century Britain. In 140 AD, 20 years after the unexplained disappearance of the entire 9th Legion in the mountains of Scotland, young centurion Marcus Aquila, Channing Tatum, arrives from Rome to solve the mystery and restore the reputation of his father, the commander of the 9th. Accompanied only by his British slave, Esker, Jamie Bell, Marcus sets out across Hadrian's Wall into the uncharted highlands of Caledonia to confront his savage tribes, make peace with his father's memory, and retrieve the Lost Legion's golden emblem, the Eagle of the 9th. Don't know if this is going to be quite my film, but if it's for you, the special features has got an audio commentary with director Kevin MacDonald. We've got an alternate ending, deleted scenes, and a making of. This is the one you've all been waiting for, I think. Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. Find out what's possible if you never give up. Justin Bieber's odds were 1,000,000 to 1, until millions of fans found him online. Now his world is yours with Never Say Never, the, quote-unquote, riveting and inspiring story of his journey from average teen to the youngest performer to sell out the most famous stage in New York City. The camera follows Justin Bieber during the 10 days leading up to his August 2010 sold-out show at Madison Square Garden. Footage of these 10 days of concerts, rehearsals, and downtime with boyhood friends, his mum, and his entourage is intercut with home movies, old photos, and interviews showing a musical prodigy who loves to perform. It comes to the attention of an Atlanta agent via YouTube. He impresses Usher and rockets to the international stardom soon after his 15th birthday. His manager emphasises the importance of social media and of Justin's work ethic and his personality in making him a star. The camera emphasises Bieber's look and his mum and grandparents' shine. Definitely not one for me. I don't know who it's... Well, obviously, if you're a teenage girl, it's obviously for you, but definitely not one for me. One that does look interesting is the Lincoln Lawyer, when our smooth operator, Mickey Haller, Matthew McConaughey, zips around Los Angeles in his chauffeured Lincoln Town car, cutting deals and finding clients on the road. Then he lands a doozy, a real rich estate heir, Ryan Philippe, accused of the brutal assault of an escort. At first, the case looks like a breeze, but odd details start nagging at Haller until he recognises an ugly connection to an earlier case and realises he's been set up in the strangest way. There are some deep implausibilities in The Lincoln Lawyer, but they hardly matter. This is a movie that cruises on charm and smart casting, from McConaughey as a man whose glib polish is betrayed by a streak of doubt, down to the detectives, with solid performances from Bryan Cranston, Michael Paré, Michaela Conlon and others. And lowlifes with Catherine Moaning, an unlucky hooker, Shea Whigham as a lazy snitch, that flesh out the legal world. Every character pops out clean and distinct. This sort of web of deceit storyline, full of twists and turns, depends on the audience clearly connecting all the players. Some moments get overstated or maybe don't make complete sense, but the zippy pace carries carries the audience over those bumps. The Lincoln Lawyer could easily turn into a TV series, a sort of Rockford Files-esque mixture of procedure and puzzle-making. Also starring Marissa Tomei, William H. Macy, Francis Fisher, John Leguizamo, and Josh Lucas as the prosecuting attorney who gives McConaughey some competition in the chiseled looks department. Now, watching the trailer and seeing McConaughey with his southern drawl, it does look like a bit like Time to Kill all over again. I'll say one thing for him too, he just doesn't seem to have aged at all in 15 years. But anyway, this does look like a film that's worth watching, so I think I'll definitely check that one out. Now, just before, we're going to be having just a couple more, well, little one or two bits of news for new releases out this week, and a bit of film news. But first of all, I'm going to have another song. We're going to have Classics Nouveau, I Will Return. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Classics Nouveau with I Will Return, and you're listening to 106.6. I'm from North Manchester, back with the DVD Fever Show, with me, Dom Robinson. And we've got one more new release out this week, and it's Middlemen. Now, in 1995, everyone had a VCR, music was sold in record stores, and the World Wide Web was a newfound discovery. Businessman Jack Harris, Luke Wilson, had the perfect life, a beautiful family, and a successful career fixing problem companies. Then he met Wayne Bearing, Giovanni Ribisi, and Buck Dolby, K. Gabriel Macht. Two genius but troubled men. They had invented the way adult entertainment is sold over the internet. When Jack agrees to help steer their business, he soon finds himself caught between a 23-year-old porn star and the FBI, all the while becoming one of the wealthiest entrepreneurs of his time. Witness a story so outrageous, you won't believe it's true. A story that proves that business is a lot like sex. Getting in is easy, but pulling out is hard. Oh. Our special features on this disc include deleted scenes, outtakes, and a slap montage. The trailer for this one actually does look like a really good laugh. And overall, I do think that it's a film worth checking out. And I'd rather watch a film with Luke Wilson in any day than his brother Owen Wilson, who just seems to be in flipping everything, and I can't stand him at all. Other films out this week. We've got 16 Wishes, The Castle, The Kremlin Letter, No Surrender, Oranges and Sunshine, and Went the Day Well. There's also some TV series. We've got Baywatch Series 4, Beauty and the Beast Complete Series, CSI Miami Season 8, Ideal Series 7, In Deep Series 1, Medium Season 6, and Wallander Collected Films from number 8 to number 13, a box set of that. It's also new Blu-ray debuts with American Graffiti, Crybaby, Dazed and Confused, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and National Lampoon's Animal House. Now, a bit of film news to take you up to the top. We've got Harrison Ford to play cowboy Wyatt Earp in Black Hats. The novel takes artistic liberties with Earp's life story, positing that he spent his final years as a private detective and movie consultant in L.A. When he discovers that Doc Holliday's son is in trouble with notorious gangster Al Capone, Earp reteams with one of his former deputies to take on the mob. A big stylistic sell here, which apparently caught Ford's interest, is the concept of the grizzled gunslinger tackling 20s mobsters. Ford will be seen donning a Stetson and wielding a six-shooter in this summer's sci-fi western mashup Cowboys and Aliens, so he must presumably have enjoyed messing with his iconic genre's tropes. Max Allen Collins also wrote the graphic novel on which The Road to Perdition was based, and Black Hats has landed a white-hot screenwriter in the form of Kurt Jonstad. Jonstad was a man who wrote the script for 300, and he's currently scribbling away on the prequel Battle of Artemisia. He's also written The Last Photograph, and has recently been engaged to rewrite the script for Jack Snyder's Man of Steel. There's a slight similar thing to that. At the Comic Con that happened recently, previous Superman Henry, well, was it the new one? Not this track. Henry Cavill stumps for Immortals and raves about the Man of Steel script. Hollywood's new Superman flew into Comic Con. See, my voice has gone today, I'm sorry. Hollywood's new Superman flew into Comic Con on Saturday, but said very little about Jack Snyder's Man of Steel, which begins shooting in Chicago this week. Instead, he landed in Hall H to talk about Immortals opening in November, an epic fantasy inspired by Greek mythology, directed with ferocious flair by surreal stylist Tarsem Singh from The Cell, and co-starring Mickey Rourke, Luke Evans and Kellan Lutz. The real stars of the show were two pieces of footage, a 3D trailer stuffed with awesome images of extraordinary scope, monolithic statues, a tidal wave, and an imploding mountain, and a battle scene showcasing Evans' Zeus. Tarsem told attendees that his R-rated movie was a little darker and a little more hardcore than previous releases may have suggested, and that the elaborately choreographed fight sequence between Zeus, supported by other warriors in gold-plated armour, and the hellacious subterranean creatures filled with bloodshed and beheadings and man-beasts getting split in half with a swing of the sword proved it. "My stuff blends well to 3D," says Tarsem, whose painterly style is marked by static, meticulously detailed still-life compositions with great depth of field where individual elements suddenly activate with dynamic action. Cavill was cordial to the crowd when he spoke, which wasn't very often. Fans were asked to keep their questions focused on Immortals. Moderator Jeff Boucher of the Los Angeles Times did ask the star to explain why Warner Brothers decided to move Man of Steel from late 2012 to the summer of 2013, and Cavill declined to comment, saying, "There's nothing I can say." Wow. Other than that, it's one of the best scripts I've ever read, and I can't wait to get started. Okay, so that's all your film news as well for this week. And going to be having, well, that's the top of the hour now, so that's all your film stuff done for this week. And we're going to be having video games, so, well, video games and TV in the next hour, starting with a review of Fear 3 on the Xbox 360. But before that, we've got Kylie Minogue and Confide in Me. This is Manchester's, well, this is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Blondie with Denis, and before that, you had, was it Kylie with Confide in Me? Now, in this second hour, we start off with video games, and we're going to be having a review of Fear 3 on the Xbox 360. We'll also be having the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, including The Sims 3, Town Life stuff, and The Smurfs, plus some video games news. After that, we have the TV side of it. In the second half hour, we're going to be having a look at, back at The Hour and 2012, both on BBC Two, and Sugartown on BBC One. Did anyone watch that? It was on way too late, anyway. And look ahead, some more programmes coming up, as well as some TV news itself. Starting off with a review of Fear 3 on the Xbox 360, Alma is back, and this time she's bringing a child. Well, a fetus, really, as it hasn't yet been born, and you're tasked with preventing its birth, as Alma ended up pregnant at the end of the second game. Now, the basic premise is that about 9 months ago, well, it would be 9 months ago, Point Man, your character in the game, and his Fear Squad, had to sort out a telepathically gifted cannibal who had gone off on a murder spree. The target was your brother, Paxton Fettel. Where do they get these names? Who was working alongside their tortured and physically powerful mother, Alma Wade. Now, at this point, I start losing the plot, or failing to understand precisely what's going on. I can't be the only one, but I don't think it really matters. I do love a good first-person shooter, and this is a highly entertaining one for sure, even if sometimes it does go on a bit. Even if you're not into the supernatural side of it a great deal, you can get by without worrying about that too much, as long as you just realise that a whole heap of crazy stuff is going on, and that most of the time you can just get away with shooting, throwing grenades and having a good blast. However, along the way, as you sneak round corners looking for the next firefight, strange hallucinations will appear before you, sometimes to end a scene and sometimes as brief flashes in front of you. Along the way, you'll be able to perform solo psychic links on corpses, which sound like something that should really lead to something, but in the end, it's just a side issue to give you more points, which are racked up and shown to you at the end of the level. What is incredibly impressive is how it looks and plays out. Fear 3 contains the right amount of detail to set the scene, allowing for clever lighting, nice touches, like brilliant glass chattering, splinter and gun effects. And just look at enemy bodies as they continue to shake after being shot to death, as if the blood is still pumping around for a while. Lovely. In addition, there's usual ragdoll physics on view, and generally Fear 3 is more of the same, but that's a good thing for this game series. The sound is loud and proud and kicks major ass in Dolby Digital 5.1, and once again, when it comes to gameplay, I love the ability to slow-mo the enemies for a brief time. Whereas in the last game, there seemed to be a little bit too much going on in pressing a lot of buttons at once. This time, things seem a little bit eased off in that respect, which does serve as a handy improvement. Now, I'm just one for single-player games, but if you're into multiplayer, then there are four modes. The first one is one I can only say at this time is called Effing Run. I can't obviously say what it's really called, which features four players running through waves of enemies, all the while running into Alma's massive wall of death. The players start off in a safe room and proceed through levels, killing enemies within a certain amount of time. There are several safe rooms throughout the mode, and if a player is downed, one of the co-op players can revive them. If one player is killed, the game is over. There's Contractions, a survival round-based game mode where you must barricade and stock up weapons against 20 waves of enemies from the Fear 3 single player, similar to Call of Duty's Nazi Zombies. Although the further you increase through the waves, the tougher it gets by adding a fog effect that creeps closer and closer, making the map much more dangerous. The Sole Survivor, which has four players pitted against each other, with one player playing as a Spectre, in which he or she has to possess enemies to kill the other three players and turn them into Spectres before the time runs out. There's also Soul King, which is similar to Soul Survivor, but with the exception that all the players play as Spectres, but must possess enemies to kill each other and collect drop souls. Teamwork and cooperation is needed for players to win in the game modes. In addition to all this, movie director John Carpenter and writer Steve Niles have given their input into the cinematics and the story, and note that once you complete a level as Point Man in the single player mode, you can then replay that level as Paxton Fettel. Basically, this is Fear 3. Did you love the first two? Of course you did. You know, so you don't have to listen to me. Just go out and buy it, basically. Graphics and sound, 10 out of 10 each for that. Playability, 8. Enjoyment, a good 9. I think the previous ones were a 10, but it's just sort of, it is a little bit too much of the same path sometimes. But it's still much better than most games out there. And overall, a good solid 9. Quick look at the top 10 charts now. We've got number 1 yet again, endlessly, Zumba Fitness. Number 2, we've got a new entry for Call of Juarez, The Cartel. This is the third game in the series, and I hadn't played either of the two previous games, but the gameplay I've linked on the Facebook page looks pretty similar to and as competent as the Just Cause series, so this one certainly seems worth a look. Number 3, you've got Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 4, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Number 5, still hanging in there, we've got Call of Duty Black Ops. Number 6, Dungeon Siege 3. Number 7, Dirt 3. Number 8, Cars 2. Now, I saw this, I saw the trailer for this, and amongst all the in-between game CGI sequences, the actual gameplay looks very basic indeed. You sort of drive along and that's it. Maybe if you're 5 years old, you'll enjoy it, but it doesn't seem like it's for adults. Number 9, FIFA 11. And number 10, Lego Star Wars 3, The Clone Wars. There's also new entries for Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon at 15, and Just Dance 2 Extra Songs at 18. And also re-entries for number 33 for Sniper Ghost Warrior, number 37 for Hunted Demon's Forge, 38 Pokemon White Version, number 39 Fight Night Champion, and number 40 for Just Cause 2. So that's all that's the Fear 3 review and also your top 10 charts out this week. We're going to have some new video games releases coming out on Friday. But first of all, we're going to have Carol Bayer-Sega, and she's moving out today. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Carol Bayer-Sega, who's moving out today. Well, she's telling someone else to move out today. And you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester. This is the DVD Fever Show with Dom Robinson. And we're now having a look at some of the new video games releases coming out on Friday. Now, there's nothing, no big titles coming out. I mean, I suppose it's because it's the summer. We'll go through it, and there may be something of interest for somebody out there. We've got The Sims 3, Town Life Stuff. Now, with exciting content never seen before in a stuff pack, The Sims 3 Town Life Stuff introduces new venues to give your Sims' entire town a makeover, complete with objects just as perfect for their homes. Build a chic new library, create an exclusive high-tech gym, hopefully with all the equipment working, unlike my local one, design a fun playground, or make chores a pleasure with a fresh new laundry room. Since when was doing laundry ever a pleasure? I've got loads at home. The Sims 3 Town Life Stuff not only gives you loads of new inspired design to use at home, but includes new community places like Scrumptious Nibbles Cafe for your Sims to visit as well. It says the features include pre-built venues and lots. I'm trying to get that out. It says give your Sims towns a new look with spectacular ready-to-go venues and community lots, or construct your own cool settings. Time to unwind. Kids will love the new sunny bungalow, jungle gym, slide and sandbox, while grown-ups can play chess by the new fountain. Study time or story time. Update the library with an elegant array of accessories, build your own study, or create cubicles with specialised sectional seating. New casual outfits and hairstyles. Clothes for running errands, hanging out, or working out. There are lots of styles for all your Sims fashion needs. Also out this week, we've got Virtual Villages. Now, Virtual Villages is a series of village simulator video games based on puzzles and strategy and have an underlying motive throughout, with a fusion of ethnic and cultural backgrounds surrounding a mythical island called Isola. There are four portions to the island in which the game is set, being the cardinal points of the compass. In the first game, A New Home, islanders have lived in peace for many years on their island, But one day, a volcano erupted and destroyed their home. The survivors fled and discovered another island called Isola, where they make their new home. There they must uncover the secrets and puzzles of Isola and create a village. This game is based around organising and growing a village to develop villagers with more skill sets, culminating in giving birth to a child with all five skill sets. The second game, The Lost Children, in that one, a wandering pair of villagers come upon a group of orphan children and create a thriving village. And the third game, The Secret City, involves a group of villagers stumbling on an abandoned, forgotten city and attempting to restore it. This basically sounds pretty similar every single game you play, to be honest. But it says the general premise of the series is the creation of a new civilization on the island of Isola by groups of settling villagers. Also out, we've got The Smurfs, which is, this one's on Wii and the DS. Oh, The Virtual Villagers was on DS, by the way, and the other Sims 3, that was on PC only. But The Smurfs, that's a new video game developed by Ubisoft. It'll be released for Nintendo DS and Wii, coinciding with the release of the new Smurfs movie. In The Smurfs, you get to play a series of fun and educational mini-games and read along stories about the Smurfs as they prepare for the Blue Moon Festival in their village and are disrupted by Gargamel. Play fun mini-games, cake decoration, Smurf Symphony, find the Smurf and Smurfette's dress-up. Collect figurines of your favourite characters. Earn a figurine after you've overcome the challenges in each mini-game and read along stories by interacting with the story and selecting different items in the game to change the outcome of the story. And the only other game that's out this week, and so I thought I may as well mention it. I'm sure you've all been waiting for this. Also out on the Wii and DS, we've got Max and the Magic Marker, which is a physics-based 2D puzzle platformer in which the player controls the boy Max and his magic marker. Doesn't sound as good as Jamie the Magic Torch, though. While Max enables good old platforming fun, the marker provides the game's signature feature, the ability for the player to draw directly inside the game world, where everything drawn becomes physical objects. Sounds like a cartoon from the 80s. This feature is used to complete levels and overcome challenges, but it also provides the player with a unique tool that in itself is fun to play around with. Okay, so that's all your new releases for, well, coming out this Friday. I say there wasn't much, to be honest. Bit of a shame, really. You usually expect at least one big title that comes out each week, but as I say, it's sort of around about summertime, so it's going to be sort of probably sort of September time when we get some of the new big releases out again. But in a bit we're going to have some video games news. But first of all, we're going to have another song. And we've got D-Light, Groovers in the Heart. This is Manchester 106.6.
106.6.
That was D-Light with Groovers in the Heart. And you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester, with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we're going to have a quick look at some video games news. Now, Batman Arkham City will have future episodes. This is according to Batman voice artist Kevin Conroy. Batman Arkham City features allies Robin and Catwoman as they aid Batman in stopping notorious villains including Two-Face, the Penguin, Mr. Freeze and the Riddler amid the dangerous streets of Arkham City. The thing about Arkham City is that it's going to be an ongoing game, Conroy told Comic Booked. You're going to be able to download future episodes of it, so it's going to be going on for quite a while. I've been recording it for a while. Downloaded content challenge rooms has already been confirmed for Batman Arkham City through the recently announced collector's edition of the game. It is unconfirmed whether the future episodes mentioned by Conroy refer more to challenge rooms or missions built into the game's story campaign. Batman Arkham City will be available on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 and PC from October the 18th in North America and October the 21st in Europe. Also in the news this week, GoldenEye 007 Reloaded was in development alongside the previous Wii version, it has been revealed. Activision first launched the GoldenEye remake on a Nintendo platform for nostalgic purposes, but positive feedback saw them start work on a high-definition version at the same time. We originally developed it for the Wii because it makes sense from a nostalgic point of view, with the N64 version being the original game, producer James Steer said. We developed the game for the Wii, and we wanted to make the best Wii game we could. And we did that. But as we were touring with the game, we were getting more feedback that people wanted to play it on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. We started to work on an engine with Eurocom that could deliver the 60 frames per second 16-player multiplayer, the true HD graphics, and the really lifelike characters. We're working on that in the background while the game team were focused on the Wii game. Steer added that work on the new engine was completely independent of the Wii's development and was in production through 2010. It was completely independent of those guys. The technology team at Eurocom have their own shared services to create an engine that's capable of that, he said. Reload is a result of that work, and that the game team were able to switch over when we released GoldenEye. Announced also recently, GoldenEye 007 Reloaded is a high-definition port of last year's GoldenEye 007 for the Wii, and will feature entirely new graphics and new modes, and the game will be available later this year. Also, we've got Doctor Who, the adventure games. They return in October with a Guy Fawkes episode. Now, Series 6 Part 2 will begin with the gunpowder plot and sees the Doctor, Amy and Rory battle aliens in London in 1605. Guy Fawkes will have a role in the episode, which will see the return of two old Doctor Who enemies. The gunpowder plot is written by Phil Ford, a returning writer from last season, and is produced by Gary Russell. Executive producers Stephen Moffat, Piers Wenger, Beth Willis, Anwen Aspden and Charles Sessler will also return for the second series of Doctor Who The Adventure Games. The new series will see several gameplay enhancements, including non-linear routes, more sophisticated puzzles and a more complex lighting system. Doctor Who The Adventure Games has seen more than 2.6 million downloads since its release last year and was named as a finalist at last week's Develop Awards. Okay, so that's all your video games news for this week. And in the last half hour of the show, we're going to be having a look at some TV stuff. We're going to look at some TV programs watching in the past week, some stuff to recommend that's coming up, and also some TV news. But before we get to that, we're going to be having Foo Fighters with Times Like These. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Foo Fighters with Times Like These, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson on 106.6, live from North Manchester. And now, in this half hour, we're going to be having a look at some TV stuff, starting with some programmes watched in the past week, starting with The Hour, which is on every Tuesday at 9 o'clock now. At Alexandra Palace, reporters and best friends Belle Rowley and Freddie Lyon are finishing another long day working on the BBC newsreels. Fed up with constantly overlooking the issues of the day in favour of royal engagements and sporting triumphs, both yearn for bigger, bolder stories and a freedom to dictate their own agenda. But on this particular occasion, both are hopeful. Clarence Fenley is assembling a team for a new weekly current affairs programme, The Hour, at Lime Grove, and there's a sense that Belle and Freddie may just be about to get the break they need. When Freddie finds himself reporting from the engagement party and realises the debutante is a childhood friend, he finds himself drawn into the murky world of subterfuge, intimidation and political scheming. It's a story which will lead him from a suspicious murder and a coded message into the private dealings of the ruling elite and ultimately to a conspiracy which has the potential to shatter the society around him. Running for six parts, it stars Julian Ryan Tutt, Anton Lesser, Anna Chancellor, Dominic West from The Wire, Romola Garai from Crimson Petal and the White, and Ben Whishaw. It looked like the UK answer to the US hit Mad Men, with a 1960s advertising company being swapped for a 1950s news broadcaster company. And I didn't like Mad Men, but I thought I'd give this a try. But I got bored silly, as it really dragged. But I mean, it's difficult to know what to think about it, but I'm going to try and give it two episodes to see how it plays out, because once you get the scene setting out of the way, maybe it's going to be, you know, something that's a little bit more interesting. So far, it's not The Hour That You Cannot Miss, as the news programme within is referred to. It didn't help that the opening episode mostly featured Romola Garai and Anton Lesser as Belle and Freddie, and there was hardly any Dominic West, which is they would all been the main one who'd been plugged in the show. But, you know, see what we get. Then we have 2012, which is, again, that's on BBC Two's... it's straight on after The Wire, basically. It's on tonight, 10 o'clock. It's a comedy series following the personal and professional challenges faced by those responsible for delivering the biggest show on earth as the Olympic deliverance team try to get through to the end of the day, the end of the week, and the end of the year without all the wheels falling off at once. With time ticking inexorably downwards, the marketing team come up with a major event to mark the 1,000-day-to-go milestone. A huge clock designed by modern British artist will be installed outside the Tate Modern on the banks of the Thames in a ceremony performed by both Seb Coe and Boris Johnson, and will count down towards the start of the Olympic Games. The only problem is that the clock has a potentially potentially disastrous design flaw which no one seems to have noticed until it's too late. Meanwhile, the process of deciding which public figure should be approached to carry the Olympic torch on its journey around Britain has begun. Now, this was one of my favourite dry comedies when it was shown on BBC Four a few months ago. Highlights in the cast include Bonneville as Ian, the head of the Olympic Deliverance Commission. Olivia Colman plays Sally, his secretary, who clearly has a bit of a thing for Ian. And Jessica Hines is PR guru Siobhan, who listens to no one but the sound of her own voice. The poor design in the thousand-day clock was that it was set up to go back in time from July 27, 2012, the starting day of the Olympics. What no one failed to spot was that when the clock starts up, by the time they reach that particular date, and the Olympics begin, the clock will have counted back to the time when it was first switched on, if you're following this. The timing was perfect when this series was first shown, because in reality, the following day after the first episode was broadcast, the real 500-day countdown clock was started, and it broke down. At least twice. The series was made by the same team behind People Like Us, with a similar documentary style, but one which featured Chris Langham as the narrator and behind-the-camera reporter. Obviously, he's not going to be featured in too many TV shows in the future, but with David Tennant now the narrator, I tweeted a query about it, how someone must be missing Langham because the reporter's voice is identical in tone. I had a reply from Hugh Bonneville himself telling me that the voices of producer John Plowman, who was also involved in People Like Us. So it's definitely worth watching, I say, tonight. Continues at 10 o'clock on BBC Two. Now, also on this week was, on Sunday night, was Sugartown. I could go into detail about it, but it was simply dreadful. Starring Sue Johnson, Tom Ellis and Sean Dooley, there's two more episodes to go, but it was on at BBC One at 10:25 and was the kind of thing you'd expect to be on at 9 o'clock. But thanks to some unbelievably poor scheduling, there was a repeat of George Gently during prime time, bumping this into a post-news slot. So clearly they're trying to get rid of it, but there is a DVD release coming out in a couple of weeks, so somebody at the BBC must like it. I look ahead to some of the things that are coming out this week. Got Geordie finishing school for... not much, to be honest, but they've got Geordie finishing school for girls, which is on BBC Three. It's tonight at 9 o'clock. So that BBC Three, that clashes with the hour. Four privileged young ladies swap their affluent lives down south for 10 days of living on the breadline in the north. Steph, Fee, Lucy and Fiona are posh and pampered with virtually no experience at the other end of the social spectrum. Nor have any of them ever ventured north before or grappled with the Geordie accent. The girls move into an ex-council house in one of the most disadvantaged wards in the city. Here unemployment is also three times the national average, and more than half its children are classed as living in poverty. The girls immerse themselves in what's to them an alien and unfamiliar world and hand over their credit cards to live on the equivalent of job seekers' allowance. Their guides are four local women, Shauna, Lindsay, Michaela and Kimberly, who educate the southerners in the harsh realities of living with little money. The experience turns out to be a whole lot harder than they'd ever imagined. There's also The Code, which is this is tomorrow night on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. BBC have been given a fair bit of promotion to this. First episode is called Numbers. Marcus de Sotoy reveals a hidden numerical code that underpins all nature. A code that has the power to explain everything, from the numbers and shapes we see all around us to the rules that govern our own lives. In this first episode, Marcus reveals how significant numbers appear throughout the natural world. They're part of a hidden mathematical world that contains the rules that govern everything on our planet and beyond. It's a documentary in three parts. I say that starts Wednesday at 9 o'clock on BBC Two. Now also on Wednesday 9 o'clock on E4, but then you can watch it on E4 plus 1 at 10 o'clock obviously, we've got Beaver Falls. Flynn, Arab and Barry are three British chancers, fresh out of uni and determined to have one last summer of irresponsibility before they face the real world. For reasons best known to Flynn, they blag themselves jobs at Beaver Falls, an elite American summer camp for the ridiculously beautiful teenage offspring of California's rich and powerful. In episode one, the guys arrive at the camp. Arab is packing a broken heart. Barry, a stash of weed. and Flynn an insatiable desire to get laid as much as possible. Things appear to get off to a good start when Barry meets the gorgeous lifeguard Kimberly and Arab clicks with wholesome guidance counsellor Rachel. But threats to their summer of fun start to mount when they fall out with the jocks and the kids, and Flynn's raging libido lands them all in some very hot water. Eventually an uneasy truce is formed, but a message from home reveals Flynn is hiding a secret. I saw the trailer for this and I wasn't really going to watch it, but it does seem like a bit of a laugh, so yeah, maybe worth a look. So that's tomorrow at 9 o'clock. I say, same time as The Code, which is also on BBC Two, but with E4, you've got E4 plus one, so you can watch Beaver Falls at 10 o'clock. Okay, so that's all the TV reviews and look at what's coming up so far, and I'm going to have some TV news in a bit. First of all, we have David Bowie and Rebel Rebel. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was David Bowie with Rebel Rebel, and you're back on 106.6 live from North Manchester. That's the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson. And we're back now with some TV news. Firstly, something in the news, we've got Channel 4 has axed the university sitcom Campus. This is the university-based sitcom created by the team behind Green Wing, and it's been axed due to poor viewing figures. Spokesman for Channel 4 told Broadcast magazine, "Channel 4 are very proud to have championed Campus and those fans who watched and adored it, but there simply weren't enough of them to justify a second series. The news that the show has been cancelled will disappoint its fans, as the series ended with a cliffhanger involving one of the main characters becoming pregnant, and the final episode concluded with various complicated relationships left unresolved. Ratings for Campus were poor from the start and became worse as the series progressed, although fans of the show did stick with the show online. The 2009 pilot, shown as part of that year's comedy showcase season, attracted 900,000 viewers, which is 5% of the audience. However, the first episode of the full series, which started in April, attracted just 610,000 viewers, which was only 3.7%. And the final episode in May was watched by only 360,000. The average ratings across the course of the series, not including the pilot, was 554,000 viewers, or about 3% of the audience, below the average that Channel 4 expect. Aside from the ratings, Campus was also the subject of many poor reviews, with critics comparing it unfavourably to Green Wing, claiming it was less funny than its predecessor. The press also attacked the main character, power-crazed Vice-Chancellor Jonty DeWolf, played by Andy Nyman, claiming the character was too offensive and a pale comparison to The Office's David Brent. Also in the news, the Comedy Lab 2011 lineup has been announced, and the six comedies taking part in Channel 4's 2011 Comedy Lab season have now been officially announced. There's sketch shows from Anna and Katie and Totally Tom, sitcoms about political correctness, a failed comedian, and the South Asian sport Kabaddi, and a live studio comedy from comedy trio Pappies. Comedy Lab has been running on Channel 4 for a number of years now, with Peter Kay, Russell Brand, and Jimmy Carr amongst the stars who piloted shows throughout the system before they became famous. Comedy Commissioner Neri Seven says, "Comedy Lab's an amazing spawning ground for future household names, giving the first TV breaks to a host of exciting new talent, both performers and writers. This year's alumni is a fantastically diverse collection of comedy talent." One of the six shows making up the lineup include Anna and Katie, which this is a sketch show from Double Act, Anna Crilly, aka Magda in Lead Balloon, and Katie Wicks, Daisy Not Going Out. They bring their unique brand of character comedy to a self-titled one-off sketch show. With special guest appearances from Lee Mack, amongst others, Anna and Katie introduces us to the biggest soap opera in Germany, daytime TV show Congratulation, and Eamon Holmes' latest game show Pointer, amongst a range of silly characters. It's also Totally Tom from Baby Cow Productions, which is a sketch show written and performed by live comedy circuit double act Tom Palmer and Tom Stourton. Set in the hours of darkness and in a non-specific metropolis, the unique and sometimes macabre world of Totally Tom is inhabited by an array of characters, some relatively normal and some bordering on the grotesque. During our visit, we meet a bitchy pair of cocaine-fueled posh girls, a cop with an over-imaginative sense of drama, a pair of Scottish brothers locked in a cycle of poverty, and we also see an edgy new team drama set in the Hitler Youth. The remaining pilots are Cabadasses, written by newcomer Nikesh Shukla, Mr. and Mrs. Hotty Hot Hot Show, starring Ben Clark, Matthew Crosby and Thomas Parry, and The Warm-Up Guy, starring up-and-coming comic Tom Davis. It's also Rick and Peter with Channel 4 presenter Rick Edwards and Peter Mitchell from disability comedy drama Cast-Offs, with characters of themselves. Okay, we'll have a little bit more TV news in a moment. First of all, we're going to have another song. This is going to be Adam and the Ants, Stand and Deliver. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Adam and the Ants with Stand and Deliver. And you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester. And it's the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson. And we're in the final section now. And taking a look at some more TV news. Starting off, first of all, the Fast Show may possibly be making a return. This was the hit 1990 sketch show. Simon Day, one of the show's writers and actors, appeared on ITV chat show Daybreak recently to plug his new autobiography. When asked about the sketch show, he confirmed that the creators have had several meetings to discuss the idea of bringing back the show. He said, "I can't divulge too much at the moment, but certain members of the Fast Show have been convened together in a room in the utmost security." The Fast Show, which also starred Charlie Higson, Paul Whitehouse, Mark Williams, Arabella Weir, John Thompson and Caroline Ahern, appeared on BBC Two for three series between 1994 and 1997. It was noted for delivering short sketches for its heavy focus on catchphrase-based humour. The idea of the format was born when Whitehouse and Higson saw a preview tape of Harry Enfield's show, which had been edited into fast-cut highlights for press reviewers. They realised they could create a sketch show that did away with long build-ups to punchlines. Although the Fast Show ended 14 years ago, the team have staged a live tour in 2002 and reunited after that to launch a DVD. The programme also generated a number of spin-off sitcoms based on characters from the show, including Grass, based on the character of Billy Bleach, which I'd rather like a second series of that, Ted and Ralph and Swiss Tony. Since the Fast Show, Higson and Whitehouse, Weir and Day, have worked together on the spoof Radio 4 phone-in show Down the Line, with a TV version of the format Bellamy's People, although that in itself has been cancelled after one series. Now, also, we've got Ricky Gervais is working on a new US sitcom. Ricky Gervais, the co-creator of The Office and Extras, is to team up with American writer and producer Clyde Phillips to create a new sitcom for American TV. According to Entertainment Weekly, the duo are writing a pilot episode of Afterlife together at the moment, with plans to film the trial episode early next year. The sitcom will be about an atheist who finds himself in heaven. Gervais will not take on the lead role, but is expected to make a cameo appearance in the pilot. Last Christmas, Gervais wrote about being an atheist in the Wall Street Journal, an article which prompted a heated debate in America. He also has previously starred in Hollywood film The Invention of Lying, which many consider to be an underlying pro-atheist message. Clyde Phillips has been the executive producer on a number of American dramas, most recently the hit serial killer show Dexter. And writing on his blog, Gervais explained, "Dexter has consistently been my favourite show of the last 5 years. When I saw Clyde's name all over it, I knew I had to work with him one day. I found out he was also a fan of my work and we became friends on email and through short conversations on various red carpets. We finally started working on an idea this year and we really hit it off. And I'm so excited about this project." Okay, so that's all your TV news for this week, and that's the show for this week as well. And thanks very much to everyone who's listened. And so if you want to have a look at any of the trailers and gaming footage that I've mentioned during the show, go on to the DVD Fever Show with Don Robinson, search for that on Facebook. And we'll be back again at midday on Tuesday. So that's everything for this week. You're listening to 106.6 live from North Manchester. I'm going to play out with Joe Boxers and Boxer Beat.
106.6.